One part, first part of the finance, which the exporter can apply to their bank and get, is known as pre-shipment finance, or also known as a packing credit. That is, credit being given to the exporter for costing of the goods. Cost, manufacturing cost, covered up to the packing stage of the goods. Goods packed and ready for export. Up to that level, the pre-shipment finance is granted by the bank to the exporters. This will cover purchase of raw material, goods, processing them into finished products, storage cost, packing and marking of goods prior to shipment. This is all covered under the packing credit. This is approved by the bank when a firm order is placed on the importer, by the importer on the exporter. Order sends you a firm, importer sends you a firm order, exporter receives that order, may be backed up with the documentary credit or LC. So based on that firm order, bank will give you packing credit. And pre-shipment finance is granted for a period of 180 days as it is a working capital. It can be extended further by 90 days. And normally banks will give you to the extent of 75% of the order value, because banks will presume that certain finance you have put in your own, and as far as the total export value is concerned, there will be a profit, there will be other costs which would be subsequently done. So 75% of the contract value will be granted by the bank to the exporter. And on these lines, Reserve Bank of India has simplified the rules for credit to exporters, through which they can now get long-term advances from banks up to 10 years to service their continuation of contracts. If they get long-term contracts on a continuity, recurring basis. So Reserve Bank has now simplified certain rules. And of course, these measures will help exporters to get into a long-term contracts while aiding their overall export performance. They need not go into marketing again and again. Once the marketing is over, you get into a long-term contract, your marketing cost is out. So your profitability may increase and you may be able to offer a competitive price on a long-term basis. There is a second form of finance, is the post-shipment finance. That is, after you complete the shipment, you get a finance. And sometimes what happens is, when you complete the shipment, you send the documents through your bank to the buyer's bank, and they get payment from the buyer and send it to you. It may take at least 1 month to 3 months or so. And in order to cover this period, and in order to allow the exporter to complete more turnover, exporter can get post-shipment finance. Here, this finance is granted after the shipment is over. The exporter can present the bill to the bank and request the bank for post-shipment finance. The bank will purchase the bill or collect the bill or maybe discount the bill also and give 90% of the invoice value to the exporter. From this 90%, 75%, which has been granted in terms of packing credit would be deducted and balance 15% the exporter will get in his hands. And this finance the exporter is required to get. And he gets it from this, he pays the wages, he completes payment of the other services, he has got to pay for cargo, shipping charges, paying for advertising, overseas marketing for promotion, all these additional costs over and above the costing of the product, he would be able to pay when he gets the 90%. And banks will say 10% is of course profit margin. Therefore, up to 90% the bank will make a post-shipment finance. The finance or loan can also be obtained by the exporter based on bills raised against a documentary credit issued by the importer or overseas company. Even when you get a documentary credit, same method can be adopted. Why? Because documentary credit may be of different kinds. It may say, yes, you make immediate payment, but it may also say that based on the documents, you send it to our bank. Buyer may say, send it to our bank, and then our bank will check the documents and then make payment. So there may be conditions attached, but in that case also, you will get post-shipment finance from the bank. Apart from these two, there are other forms of finance also as far as imports and exports are concerned. There is a deferred export finance. And this finance is available to importers or overseas buyers to facilitate import of goods. Now, normally, importers have to pay immediately as far as getting the details of the goods. But certain importers may feel that they also need time to resell the goods in their market. So they may also need financial credits. And in India, we have got the Exim Bank, which allows this. There are two types over here. One, the supplier's finance. This is provided to the exporter by the exporter's bank to sell the goods on installment basis. This is supplier's finances to the exporter. Second is the buyer's finance, which is the finance provided to the overseas buyer by the exporter's company. Our Indian company will give a finance to the foreign buyer. And what will happen that when the shipment has been made, the bank would make payment to the exporter over here. And then ultimately it would be the importer who will make payment with interest to that bank. Again, the second form is export finance against all subsidies. The subsidies you get in the form of duty drawback, GST refunds, rebates in any form, including RoDTEP, etc., etc. Banks will grant you finance against these subsidies also. But exporters can also obtain export finance by banks in circumstances when there is an unexpenditure rise in expenditure due to national and international changes. Suddenly, there is always a possibility that certain governments change, and with the changed government, there are additional conditions applied, whether your government or foreign government. And due to this, there is an unexpected rise in any expenditure involved. So banks will also give finance on this account on a long-term basis. As I told you before, our Indian government gives an interest subvention scheme to the exporters. by reducing the interest on the export transactions. The interest subvention scheme is a form of grant to ease the burden of exporters. This is done by providing easy finance at a concession rate to manufacturer exporters and merchant exporters both. This will allow them to obtain loans from banks at a concessional rate, thereby making them more competitive. They become competitive by reducing their costing to that extent. The scheme adds to making the merchandise cheaper by economizing the financial costs. It also incentivizes the producers because it eases the cash crunch and ensures the easy availability of funds to meet any working capital needs by the exporter. It's a very big boost for export. This again in turn enables the Indian exporters to meet their obligations under contractual agreements with foreign importers. These are terms between exporters and importers. There is always a contractual obligation involved over here. The moment an export contract is signed, it becomes a law-backed contractual obligation both between the buyer and the seller. Seller to give goods as per what is mentioned in the document, and buyer to make payment, receive the goods, make payment. It's a contractual agreement. And this interest subvention scheme helps the exporters to look after their obligations. Let us now look at the transaction cost. What is a transaction cost? Because ultimately it hurts the costing and pricing of an export-import transaction. It is not the costing on the production of the goods. For production, there is a separate costing basis. Okay? A transaction cost is a cost incurred in making an economic exchange. The exchange between the buyer and seller is an economic exchange, and cost incurred in the exchange is known as the transaction cost. It is not a part of the production cost. Okay? Now, search and information costs are costs such as those incurred in determining that the required goods are available on the market, who has the lowest price, etc. Importers do a lot of web searching or contacting various parties. They incur a certain level of expenditure, and that level of expenditure is a part of the transaction cost. Same way, the exporter also incurs a certain expenditure when they try to locate buyers in foreign countries, maybe web searching, maybe contacting different agencies, etc., etc. They incur a certain cost. That is a transaction cost. Next part comes bargaining costs. They are the costs required to come to an acceptable agreement with the other party to the transaction, drawing up an appropriate contract, etc. Contract is a legal binding document. It incurs a certain legal expenditure also. So that again becomes a part of the transaction cost. And then policing and enforcement costs are the costs of making sure that the other party sticks to the terms of the contract in case of disputes. So this cost also adds on to the transaction cost. And therefore, the transaction cost consists of costs incurred in searching for the best supplier, partner, customer, the cost of establishing a supposedly tamper-proof contract, and the cost of monitoring and enforcing the implementation of the contract. These are all the costs involved, which are over and above the manufacturing cost on the goods, normally for local sale, domestic sale, it is not required, but for an international transaction, yes, these are added costs. Look at the chart. International trade. What are the transaction costs? One side is tariff and non-tariff costs. That is the government subsidies or government requirements of any taxes or any quotas, etc. involved for canalizing agency, etc., etc. On the other side is the transport costs, any form of transportation, which includes the insurance aspect also. And then the time cost, time factor from producing, sending the goods up to receiving the payment. The time factor denotes the interest angle. So these are the four T's of international trade. So these are the four T's of the transaction cost, which you always have to observe. The four T's are: one, transaction cost, cost related to the economic exchange behind the trade. It can include LCs, letter of credit, and transactions involved, that is bank charges, including monetary exchange if a transaction takes place in any other currency, that is the exchange risk involved in the currency. The next T is tariff and non-tariff costs, which is levies imposed by government on a realization trade flow. They can involve a direct monetary cost. Sometimes there is a export duty on certain products also. According to the product being traded or standards to be abided for a product to be allowed entry into the foreign market, there are standards involved. So on that you have to have additional costing. Three, transport costs, full cost of shipping goods from point of production to the point of consumption. And fourth is time cost, delays related to lag between an order and the moment it is received by the purchaser. These are the four T's. Exports have always played a pivotal role in the growth of Indian economy. You know, as I told you before, 1991 was a turning point. We had a very serious crisis because we had virtually no exports and only imports. There was no export growth at that time. After the liberalization of the policy, yes, our exports have picked up and we have today become very sound as far as our economy is concerned. It has helped in the growth of our economy. Therefore, it has become imperative to focus on their export competitiveness in the world market. It has really become very imperative that government is always trying to help the exporters. But there are certain hindrances also, and a key factor hindering export competitiveness has been the high transaction cost involved in exports. You know, in India, let me give you some statistics. The transaction cost involved is around 16 to 18% of the goods. Whereas other countries, the average transaction cost is between 8 and 10% only. And therefore, we have now got to understand, even the government is helping you to try to reduce the transaction cost, bring it down from this level. It is required by regulatory requirements, procedures and compliance measures, infrastructure related costs, including transport costs, time and money spent in ports or border procedures, international transportation costs, and communication costs. All these combined costing in India is on a very higher level, and therefore you need government backing on these issues. And today government is giving a lot of efforts on all these factors to ensure that the exporters reduce their transaction costs. Each and every point is being looked into by the government step by step, giving you ease. Your procedure compliances are being eased. It has been eased to a very great extent. You have digital form of procedures today which has reduced the transaction cost. You have better transportation means by infrastructure which is being built by the government. Yes, these are all stages where the government has stepped in to help the exporters in reducing the transaction cost. Now, you have completed your export shipment, and then subsequently what you have got to do is you send the document to your bank and through your bank to the buyer's bank, and buyer's bank will give it to the buyer and ultimately get you the payment. So this procedure is known as a document collection procedure. A documentary collection is a process in which a seller instructs their bank to forward documents related to the export of goods to a buyer's bank. This is entirely a procedure known as a documentary collection procedure. These documents which you give to your bank, they are presented to the buyer for payment, and then buyer makes the payment depending on the clauses mentioned in the contract. It is a total process by which an exporter's bank collects funds from the importer's bank in exchange for documents detailing the shipped merchandise. In any import-export transaction, the bank-to-bank transaction is compulsory because of the regulatory requirements of both countries. All foreign exchange transactions, there is a regulatory requirement of moving through the bank to bank, not directly. Otherwise, Money Laundering Act will enter the picture. It is a trade transaction in which exporters allow their bank to act as a collecting agent for payment of shipped goods to the buyer. Technically, the bank becomes the collecting agent, and the exporter receives payment from the importer in exchange for the shipping documents. It is not necessary that the goods reach the hands of the importer over there, then he'll make payment. No. On receipt of documents, the buyer has got to make payment. It is not like your local trader where you want to buy goods, you make payment and then you get the goods. No. Here, documents are sent through the bank and even before the goods arrive at the port of destination, the buyer makes payment for the goods. This is on the basis of documentary collection. This process facilitates import-export operations as the buyer can obtain possession of goods and clear them through customs if he has the shipping documents in his hand. So condition number one is he should have the shipping documents in his hand. And then as soon as the goods arrive, he can exchange the documents and take delivery of the goods. And the documents are only released to the buyer after payment has been made or payment undertaking has been given. The buyer has accepted a bill of exchange payable at a certain date in future. This is in case of a payment at a future date. So there is a condition granted to the bank that at such and such future date, the buyer will make payment to the bank. And then it depends on the agreement between the buyer and seller of the time factor granted as a credit to the buyer. They can make a deferred payment. They do not provide the same level of security as LCs. LCs are very secure, where you ship the goods, give documents to the bank, and bank will make payment. That is the form of the LC. But if you go to documentary collection, where there is no letter of credit, no documentary credit, there it's a document collection procedure. And of course, if you have a letter of credit or documentary credit exchange between buyer and seller, it reduces your costing because the bank acts as a channel for the documents. Banks will not wait for payment from the buyer. As a channel, bank has been instructed to make payment to the seller as soon as he receives a certain stipulated document. The bank that has received a documentary collection may debit the buyer's account and make payment only if authorized by the buyer. For a documentary collection without an LC, the buyer's bank will give the document to the buyer only when it gets payment from the buyer. Buyer will say, yes, I'm giving the payment and you are authorized to transfer this payment to the seller. Of course, this type of transaction makes an international trade operations more flexible, as this mode is now used in cases where seller does not want to deliver goods to the buyer on open account system. But due to a long-term stable business relationship between both the parties, there is no need of any security to be provided by a letter of credit or payment guarantee. It basically means that this system is normally adopted after there is a total level of understanding between the buyer and the seller on a long-term basis. Maybe initial few transactions you have, as a seller, you have insisted on documentary credit. But after a few transactions duly completed properly, payment arrived properly, you gain more confidence as far as the buyer is concerned. And maybe you may say, ki, let us not have an LC or documentary credit because that is adding to the transaction cost to the buyer and the seller. Buyer for opening the letter of credit and seller for sending the document through the bank. This process involves a certain cost level to the buyer and the seller both. And therefore, once you gain confidence, you say, okay, no, we go out of this. We don't want an LC. We send documents directly, bank, send it to their bank. Their bank will give the document, take an undertaking, or take payment and send it to you. You have gained confidence with your buyer. It is only suitable if the seller has no doubt about the buyer's ability to meet its payment obligation. Yes, that is a surety which you have got to gain that confidence. And also, if the political and economic situation in the buyer's country is very stable, it is not that there is a king who rules at his whims and fancies, no. The economic stability has got to be there in that particular country also, so that the foreign exchange can be sent properly. If there are no foreign exchange restrictions in the seller's country, then you will get it very easily. Otherwise, there is always a risk of getting a foreign exchange. For example, look at certain countries around you. Today, Sri Lanka is not able to make any payment in foreign currency. They do not have foreign currency. So that means there is no stability in that country, no economic stability in that country as far as foreign transactions are concerned. That is something which has got to be avoided while transacting with that particular country. It is also convenient for the buyer because there is no need for an advance payment. Payment for goods can be made when shipping documents have been received by the buyer. He knows he doesn't have to give advance payment. There is an understanding. Both have gained confidence with each other. A key document over here, as far as documentary collection is concerned, is the bill of exchange or a draft. It is known as first and second of draft. Just like, you know, what is a draft? It is just like an invoice. Between the buyer and seller, what is exchange is the invoice. If you raise an invoice on the buyer will make payment as per the invoice. But the exchange or draft is the banker's document or banker's invoice between bank to bank. That is a exchange draft in two forms, first draft and second draft. It is a formal demand for payment from the exporter to the importer, being given to the bank. A side draft. There are different forms of a draft also. A side draft reduces the seller's risk because the buyer's bank will not release the documents without payment from the buyer. Without the documents, the buyer cannot gain access to the goods. So the buyer wants the good, he will release the document. And to release the document, he has got to make immediate payment. That is the meaning of a side draft. Draft can also denote 30 days, 60 days credit facility mentioned on the draft. Shipping documents are documents required for the buyer to clear through the customs and take delivery of the goods. And that documents are lying with the bank. Unless and until the buyer pays to the bank, he cannot get those documents. What are the shipping documents? It can include commercial invoice, certificate of origin, insurance certificate, packing list, etc. These are the basic minimum document along with the bill of lading or airway bill. Now, when we have a bill collection being sent from bank to bank, there is always an understanding required. What is the meaning of the wordings mentioned in the respective draft, exchange draft, and collection instructions? There you have got ICC's URC 522, International Chambers of Commerce. They have developed a standard format to give meaning to this particular transaction, to give meaning to the banks as far as reading of the transaction is concerned. Payment collection against bills, also known as documentary collection, is a method used in international trade all over the world for the handling of export documents to the buyer's bank. It also gives the banks necessary instructions indicating when and on what conditions these documents can be released to the importer. All conditions need not be stipulated. There are certain words put into the document. That makes it a condition. And to understand that condition, banks always use URC 522. Export payment collection against bills rules is published by International Chamber of Commerce and is known as URC 522, developed by International Chamber of Commerce. It is, of course, different from letters of credit, documentary credit. It's totally different. And in the sense that the bank only acts as a medium for transfer of documents, but does not make any payment guarantee. Understand one thing, that banks only deal with documents. That's all. They are not responsible. They do not know anything as far as the goods are concerned. Actual goods, actual shipment, conditions, etc., etc. They are in no way concerned with these factors. They are only concerned with the factors of certain documents which have been stipulated. And based on the stipulated documents, they will make the payment. Thank you.